So our last panel is the result of our newest work stream group, which is the Global Logistics and Trade Compliance. I think it was around December, I polled several dozen companies and members and asked them to rate what do they perceive to be the top issues and challenges in their current role of logistics. And while there were three in particular, though the one that stood out over the others was valuation. So this next particular session will focus on some of the highlights of what to do, what not to do in terms of evaluating primarily your clinical and R&D product that you're importing and exporting.
Feels like they're fired up in that last panel.
That was nice of Mike to dismiss everybody. We've got the folks who really want to know all about this fantastic topic. I'll introduce myself briefly. My name is Dan Bell. I'm a senior vice president at Marken, a supply chain company that's owned by UPS. I have decades of experience in trade and mostly clinical supply chain. I'm a licensed U.S. customs broker, certified or certifiable customs specialist. It doesn't say on the certificate, but it's one of those things. And we're ready to get into this topic. But first, I'd like to introduce our panel, if you would start left to right.
Chad Eastman, I work for Dermavant. I feel like I'm somewhat unique in that I started my career 11 years in oil and gas, working for Chevron. And then I moved to Gilead for 3 years, and now I've been at Dermavant for 3 years now. I am not an expert in international trade. Actually, my good friend Giuliano, who is based in Switzerland, was supposed to be here today. And because he was unable to make it, I'm standing in for him. I am in charge of global logistics, moving API as well as drug product all around the world. So, thank you.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Aaron?
My name is Aaron. I'm with Vir Biotechnology. I've been with Vir for about 6 years. I also lead up the global logistics function at Vir Biotechnology. And in this past year, in 2023, I led the initiative to implement global trade compliance at Vir. So we just wrapped that up as of January. And I'd love to share some lessons learned and pitfalls. Yeah.
Nice. My name is Jeff Bernia. I am with Bayer Pharmaceutical out of Berkeley. I've been with Bayer for 15 years. The last 9 years, I was export management and export compliance officer. I've recently changed over to the senior manager for our shipping department, and I am happy to be here to chip in on this fun topic of valuation.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Actually, I didn't come up with the title for this session, but it's absolutely perfect. The Achilles heel, that tiny little thing that if you don't pay attention to it, it will make you fall over and lose the battle, I guess, if we think about it in those terms. But it is very, very important. I wanted to give a little one-minute history about valuation. Valuation started to become a problem for customs a long time ago. So the first time everybody got together, and by everybody I mean customs and the WTO, the trade organization, was in 1948 to decide the rules that we should all follow when we value products that are going to be imported or exported. We had another go round in the early 70s, 74 in Japan, and they kind of hung around for a real long time. And then just more recently, I think in Uruguay, we finished up with GATT. Who knows what GATT stands for? Absolutely nobody. Well, it's the generally accepted agreement on trade and tariffs. Just a fancy way to say there's some rules around how we should do this. Now, I heard many times today, I think in one of the logistics sessions or the GDP sessions, there was a lot of questions around trade. Most of the reasons things don't get through the process or don't get out of the process has absolutely nothing to do with customs. Customs are the guys with guns. They're worried about money. It's everybody else that's going to screw you up. FDA, USDA, CDC. I will ask for one more show of hands before we move on. How many in this room have had a customs hold or a customs issue? What the hell are you doing? Are you sure it was customs? Or was it just at the port and they wouldn't let you have it? Okay, all right. Well, I think this is one of those few rare cases where customs is really, really interested, because customs looks after Treasury and they also protect our borders from anything else that comes across. So I think one of the first things that comes up, and I'll put this over to our esteemed panel, is, but wait, these are investigational products. There's no cost associated with these. The question of nominal value and how you value your products in a clinical setting. So I'm going to start with you at the far end, Jeff, and give us your experience of nominal value.
Nominal value. When I went through my compliance training, per se, with our internal company, it's taught with valuation that everything has a value. No matter what you're exporting. From Bayer, I'm more on the commercial side. We do have a development group, which we do send samples out for, so that's kind of where I'm both sides. And it was explained in the training, and it stuck with me ever since, almost 8 years ago. Even our crop science group within Bayer, they have to put a value on a weed. How do you put a value on a weed? You know, it's amazing. Everything has a value. And then it was also described to me at one point, if you have your product and you ship it and it goes air and that plane crashes, how much is it going to cost you to replace that product? That is your value. Literally, that is your value that you need to, and there's processes, you know, and the way we do it is you have your full-time employee hourly rate times the hours that are worked plus you're adding the cost of the raw materials, and then you have to divide that by the product that's made. And that's literally the formulation that we use within Bayer to determine our in-process materials that are created on site. So, and it's a very hard thing to get through to new folks within. We have two new buildings on our site for new products coming into Bayer, and it's all new people. So within our site, with our trades and our compliance, we have it already mandated where anybody who is even filling out a request to ship something out, they have to go through our export training. They cannot ship or request to have something shipped until they know all the ins and outs of the import and export regulations. So that's one thing I know that it was brought up a lot earlier with a lot of the smaller companies not having that internal trade group. And I feel your pain, because I couldn't imagine not having that, because I've had that my whole career. You know, I have that support, somebody to go to for classification. They do all that for us, you know, but we have to create our valuation on site. So that's, to me, is the most, that's what I can really give information wise on the valuation, that everything has a value because it has to be replaced if lost, stolen, or broken.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Everything has a value. When people tell me on an invoice it's worth $1, I said, okay, we threw it away. Can you send us some more? Oh my God, it's going to take 8 months and $1 million to make some. I'm like, okay, it costs $1 million. Aaron, tell us a little bit about the idea of nominal value versus true value.
Yeah, I think we hear that a lot, that we're not selling this product or we're transferring it between our internal company. But regardless of the transactional value of this, if we're moving it between between locations within our company, or if we're not selling this product to a hospital, there's still a value to that that we need to assign on an invoice. Even the CBP says that even if there's no sales transaction, it's still subject to the guidelines that are stipulated by WTO for the valuation. So it's really important, like you said, to somehow calculate that. And I think we all basically have the same math. It's just how we go about calculating that to get to that nominal value. And some people call it replacement cost, nominal value. transaction value or calculated value, but the result is the same. There is some value to the material that you're shipping.
Yeah, I think the ways that Dermavant is somewhat unique is that we're a virtual manufacturer, and so in so many ways, the calculation is more simple for us. We know how much we're paying for the raw materials. We know how much we're paying for the tolling fees. Mm-hmm. We're able to do that calculation and come up with that nominal value, probably much more simple than folks that are manufacturing it themselves.
Yeah, wonderful. So the good news is there's some rules. Starting in 1948, 1974, 1980, whenever it was, 89. The rules, which you have to follow in a sequence, tell you exactly what to do. The challenge for us, of course, is when we're not selling. We've kind of talked about why you can't just make it up a nominal value on, but you start off with the value. What are you going to sell it for? What are you going to sell it if it looks like it, right? Saying that it's exactly the same, what would it have sold for if you had to replace it? We get all the way down to computed value, and that's really where we all live, in that computed space. Mm-hmm. And I think you often hear the phrase fair market value, which I always find a bit weird. Do you know what the market value is going to be? And understanding the steps that you have to take for computed value. So it's not just about knowing how much the raw materials cost, how those things were assembled, the hours and everything else that goes into it. You have to document that. And I just would love to hear from the panel, and we can go back in the reverse order, how you have that conversation, not with the trade folks or the shipping guys who are going, I just need an invoice. How do you start to go about that process? Is it a conversation with the finance team? Is it a conversation that you want to go and have with a trade specialist? Is QA involved? How are you going to document that value? Because one of the rules that goes along with that methodology is being able to demonstrate, do care, you had an idea, you wrote it down, and then you followed that process to come up with your value. So tell me a little bit about how you guys have managed that in the past.
Sure. So it's managed by trade operation. It's documented by accounting. We have our technical folks, our manufacturing folks, all involved within that conversation to ensure that all of the costs associated with the product are represented within that final value that we use for import export.
Okay, wonderful. Has anybody had an audit on value? It kind of happens a lot, but maybe you don't see it. As a customs uses an algorithm to look at the tariff number and the declared value and the weight. And then you have something called a census warning where they send you a little note that says, are you sure it's $1 million for that gram of API? Or are you sure it's $1? That's your chance to say, yes, absolutely, that's correct. Or, well, let me have a rethink about that one. So there is, you are getting checked and censored all the time by a bot or by a piece of software. So I think it's really important, because once you sign that and say, yes, this is correct, then there's that opportunity to come back and show me the workings, just like when you're at school doing math, show me how you worked it out. So how about you guys? How are you doing it?
Yeah, when we started off on this, we did pull in the folks from finance, accounting, clean supply, and external manufacturing to work on that document or procedure that would outline how to value these products. And the two goals that we had in mind were defendable and practical. Defendable meaning, there's a couple implications there, that it should be consistent, the math should math, and everything should make sense so that when you do need to justify it to a customs agency, you can show them that document. And the second part of that was,
Defendable and practical.
Yeah, so I mean, like, everybody records different statistics in their company, but the important thing is that it's practical to how you operate. There may not be measures or values that you assign to certain things, like FTE or consumables. You may not know that. But what can you measure, and how can you wrap that up into a full number to divide by your yield to get that valuation per unit? So very similar to Chad, the trade compliance group does own it, but the execution of that calculation is owned by finance. And then we do that on an annual basis, not per lot, but average across the year. every first quarter of the year.
Yeah. And for us from like the Bayer side, being a compliance officer, just like you mentioned, we automatically go to the audit. You know, if we're going to be audited, we want to make sure A through Z is covered. So what we do, somebody in our labs comes to us and says, we have drug product, drug substance, we need to ship out. Okay, give us your request. And if we even have a thought of the valuation's off, we go back and say, okay, we need to have this reconfirmed. So we will actually bring in our lab folks, our controlling groups, everybody involved, and we will have a discussion of how did we come to this. And for our auditing purposes, we actually have the requester who's requesting to ship. They have to put on a Bayer letterhead and sign, to the best of our knowledge, this is the value that we have determined, and then we actually have them fill out the formulation on how they came out with this. And that to, through our trade compliance group, that was agreed that even in any kind of audit, FDA, any kind of money audit, that would suffice anybody having that signed letterhead at that point, because another question that's gonna come up later, that'll all tie into that question. But that's how we automatically go to the audit, because those audits, especially now that we are going into the cell and gene therapy, we're getting a lot more audits. I mean, it's almost on a twice a week we're getting audits, you know, so we want to make sure that we are prepared for any new companies or any audits that could come at us. And so just for everybody else to keep in mind, you know, that's a good thing to focus on, our audits, you know, make sure your bases are covered.
That's wonderful. These guys are doing everything right. They don't need any help from me. But there's a lot of you in here that don't have a trade team. I'm going to give you one immediate red flag. When we say finance, we usually mean accountants, right? It's the accountants. I know finance think of themselves as other things than accountants. But if you hear the term generally accepted accounting practices or globally accepted accounting practices, you should run out of the room as fast as you can. Delete their telephone number from your phone book and never speak to them again, because that's absolutely the biggest red flag for customs. If they see that anywhere, if they see things on invoices like no value, value for customs is, it's, oh, let's take a closer look at that. So watch out for generally accepted accounting practices, because they just don't work. So this brings me on to horror stories. Now the door's closed. Everybody signed the NDA so we can share horror stories about other companies that we don't work at anymore. I thought I would share just one, because it was from the last quarter of last year, and I actually took it straight from CBP's website, so this is the US one. It says, the Justice Department announced today that Danco Laboratories, hopefully nobody's from Danco in here, located in New York, has agreed to pay $765,000 to resolve allegations that it violated the False Claims Act. Apparently there's a whole act that deals with this when you make up stuff when you talk to the government. By failing to pay certain customs duties, known as marking duties, on imported pharmaceutical products that lacked markings to identify their country of origin. So country of origin, valuation, and tariff numbers, that kind of trifecta, those three things all go together to help figure out how much you're gonna have to pay to do it. So that was just November, I think, they made that announcement. That was one company, one fine. They're going to get you, because guess what? That's how they get their wages paid. So I'm going to invite our panelists to share any stories around valuation that you had to deal with, that you heard about in the bar last night, or that you managed to resolve because you're really smart.
I'll go first. Mine goes back when I first became deputy compliance officer for Bayer. And our deputy is not just to Berkeley, it covers all US pharma. So as I was learning this role, the deputy officer, who was also my colleague at the time in logistics, we got a call from our group, our trade compliance group on the East Coast, saying, hey, you have the shipment that's stuck and it won't go, it's not leaving the country because the valuation. And my boss, or my coworker at that time, she looked at me and said, what did you ship out? And I said, I shipped nothing out. And I'm like, wait a minute. So this is actually how we found out on our site that we had other groups shipping stuff, exporting stuff on their own, not coming through the compliance group and the export group. Huge problem. So we spent almost 3 years creating and training everybody on site within our development group that anything but commercial, and we were finding that, wow, there are a lot of people that are doing this, and they're putting just nominal value. It's a dollar, you know. We're just giving it to whoever, you know. There's no charge. And we're like, no. So after hours of training and battling, I mean, it's not easy when you have a large volume of people that don't get the process or the regulations. So it took us about 3 years to develop this whole thing. And then come to find out, 4 years later, we actually have pharma labs in Boston that were doing the same thing. Oh boy, we're talking a different time zone, different, you know, same thing, and we're trying to coordinate this. We now have them under the same umbrella. You know, everybody has to have our export training. They have to understand the regulations. Not much of a horror story. It was scary at the time, but more of learning of, you know, really for the groups, the companies that don't have that internal group to help them study. I mean, you can find all this stuff online. Mm-hmm. Just read on it, and make sure if you have questions, you can reach out to, I mean, anybody. I mean, I would even take calls. I mean, I love talking about the compliance part of stuff. It's fun. That's why I'm here. And thanks, Bill, for inviting me to be I'm a co-lead for this whole thing, and I love it. It's just fun. So that's just what I can give out to the group here today, you know.
That's great. I love that. You didn't say, we got it fixed in a week. It was 3 years.
It takes time. And then it was instant. Nobody can ship until you come through us. You know, we review all their documents, and we give them the okay to ship. That's our format, you know. So we are aware in the compliance department. Excellent. You know, you have to control it, you know.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I can say that as Dermavant, you know, we're a very young company, but I think what we've done right is we hired very experienced people that came from big companies. So a lot of the things that I'm hearing, we've started by hiring a head of international trade operations. We have processes in place. We have everybody trained up on trade compliance that would have anything to do with it. So it feels like we're taking the right steps to not have horror stories. Knock on wood.
You just haven't caught you yet.
Yeah. Right, it's possible. So nothing to add in terms of actual horror stories at Dermavant yet.
It's great that you could hire in the talent. I think for the folks in the room that don't have a department and you're wearing multiple hats, the saving grace that you have, of course, is you also don't have thousands of products, right? You don't have 10 in commercial and another 20 going through clinical. So, you know, bringing a consultant in, working with a very experienced supply chain, transportation company or broker, just have them do everything, all the diligence on your product. That includes, have we classified it well? Does the description look right? FDA product code, you know, all of those codes, affirmation codes, do that up front. You might have a database that's really just a spreadsheet with 5-10 products on, that you have all of those trade elements, including evaluation for that product, to save yourself some grief down the road. It's great if you have a department or a team, you just send them an email and say, do this. But the reality is that's not the case for most companies.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is your process is going to save your butt here, because if you have a very robust pre-clearance or green light to ship process, then there's a lot of checks and balances in place, right? Your customs broker, your courier, and your partner or your recipient site, all three of those should stop and say, hey, that's not right. A dollar per vial should not be the value. So really relying on those partners to help you out before the material gets picked up and caught by customs. So a robust shipping process also helps to check for that value.
And I'd add that, you know, one of the things that we've done is we recognize when we don't know something, and we have hired excellent consultants and attorneys that help us to navigate kind of the complexities of, you know, producing API in multiple different places and selling into multiple different places and understanding the export and import rules that we're faced with.
No, it's good. What do they say? It's if you spend a pound now, it will save you spending thousands later on.
Yeah.
I've been around a long time. I got lots of horror stories. I seriously. Anybody in the room want to share, and you're amongst friends, so share your struggle around valuation or something. You're like, oh, I had a gotcha. Can we help this lovely young lady with a microphone? Or just shout.
I'll just share. It's actually very heartening to hear Jeff's story because it's not CMC you got to worry about. It's the scientists. We got to a point where we actually just said to our general counsel, like, nobody on the team is going to touch this, because we had a scientist who, after several conversations, refused to get trained, refused to use our chosen couriers, and was just dropping things in FedEx envelopes and sending them to Nobel.
Wonderful.
And you got to keep an eye out there, folks, because they're the ones that are the real risk. It's like CMT people understand process, understand requirements. I think it's the folks who are sort of fuzzy front end, it doesn't have any commercial value, I'm sending it to a friend. That's where we've gotten caught at customs, because they're like, you can't send something that costs thousands of dollars to ship and say it's zero value. Yeah. Like, why would you spend that much to ship it if it doesn't have any value? And I think that's happening a lot in cell and gene therapy, where there's really fuzzy stuff where even saying, what's its origin? And sometimes it's not known. So there's a lot of hiccups, and it's way upstream from CMC.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So don't listen to the accountants. Don't let the scientists have a FedEx or a UPS account. That's two good tips.
Talk to the EAs,
because they're the ones who can cancel their account. Perfect.
That's true. If they're not putting it in an envelope, they're just putting themselves down as the importer of record. It's going to be
wonderful.
Understanding what that means, and then something arises, and they go, here, can you handle this? Yeah. I'm like, oh, dear Lord, like, here, this is not good. Nobody touch anything. And, like, you have to go to general counsel, because they don't know. I'm like, we are liable. Like, this is us. Like, if you didn't review those documents, which they didn't, this all falls on us. So then they come to logistics when there's a problem. It didn't involve us when we could have made the process seamless.
I broke it. Can you fix it?
So a little story on to add to your comment. I did have a person that did not want to get trained, and I brought both of her upper management folks into a meeting with her, and I got to the point where she just, I've been doing this for years. I know what I'm doing. Leave me alone. And I said, okay, fine, but you cannot ship on a bear account. It needs to be your personal information, and then when they come after you, do not come at us. And both of her managers looked at her and went, you do exactly what he tells you to do. And I was like, thank you. As soon as you put the ownership on them, they're quick to flip the script.
Look, I think it's important. It's also trying to understand why people don't want to put a sensible value on. I had somebody who was bringing drug product over from Asia into the US, actually into this port, and they were vehement about, you know, that it had no value. And I'm like, what's the duty rate? They're like, we don't even know what that is. I'm like, how much duty are you going to pay on that? Drugs are rated zero for duty in the US. Most API has an exemption from duty. So what are you gaining? If you've done it at $1 million, you're paying zero duty already. There's no VAT here. Taxes are on tomatoes and car parts and some chemical components. So really, why would you not want to do it? There's some other really compelling reasons. I'll share this horror story. There are certain countries in the world that look at the value declared by importer, tariff number, and the stage of its development. So if you declared it at a certain value when you were doing your clinical trial, and especially if it was a nominal value, when you get your approvals and get ready to start bringing product in, unless you can justify the big price discrepancy, they will hold you to selling at the price that you had early on. Now, we know usually it's development costs make things more expensive, et cetera, but they do check it. I can tell you in certain Eastern European countries, they will go on to Google, or whatever their Eastern European equivalent of Google,